Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from AntiWar.com. This is Anti-War News for Friday, March 15th, 2024. All right, first thing, I just want to apologize for yesterday for not having a show out. I came down with a really bad stomach virus, so I was out of commission. But thankfully, it was only like a one-day bug. I felt a little out of it today, but much, much better than I did yesterday. So Kyle Anzalone and a few of the other guys wrote a ton of stuff yesterday, so I just want to start going through a few of the stories from yesterday that I missed, because there's some important stuff here. The first thing, Israel plans to move Rafah civilians. So the Israeli military announced that it plans to relocate the 1.5 million Palestinians taking refuge in Rafah to what they call humanitarian islands. So this is from Israel's chief military spokesman, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari. He said, quote, "We need to make sure that 1.4 million people, or at least a significant amount of the 1.4 million, will move. Where? To humanitarian islands that we will create with the international community," end quote. So it looks like they're saying that they're going to clear Rafah out and forcibly move these people. Where exactly is not clear. And this sounds like, you know, they say that they'll create this with the international community. That sounds like they want the U.S. to pay for whatever this sort of plan is. And then, of course, there's the risk of Israel bombing these areas anyway, as they have bombed many of these areas that they have deemed as so-called safe zones. All right, so a couple other things here. Israel's security chief cheers the killing of a Palestinian child. So this article is from Will Porter. And Itamar Ben-Gvir, the Israeli national security minister, he's in charge of the Israeli police. He commended a border guard who killed a young Palestinian boy playing in occupied East Jerusalem, describing the 12-year-old child as a terrorist. In posts to his Telegram channel on Tuesday, Ben-Gvir claimed the border officer shot a terrorist who had tried to use firecrackers against Israeli forces the night prior, arguing that the guard did exactly what was expected of him in executing the unarmed preteen. Ben-Gvir said, quote, "I salute the soldier who killed the terrorist who tried to shoot fireworks at him and the troops. This is exactly how you should act against terrorists, with determination and precision," end quote. And again, this is not Gaza. This is East Jerusalem. And a few weeks ago, I think it was, Ben-Gvir was saying that Israeli border guards in guarding the Gaza border should be able to shoot women and children. And he said, put a bullet in their head if they get too close to the border. And so this is a guy who has a lot of power in this Israeli government. And these are the kinds of things that he says. All right, so got a few more things here. Russia says that they are moving troops to the Finnish-NATO border in response to the NATO expansion. House Democrats are trying to force a vote on a $95 billion bill. That's the foreign military aid bill. And so they're filing this petition. I forget exactly what it's called. Maybe a discharge. Yeah, discharge petition. And if they get enough people to sign it, they need at least 218 signatures. So that means they're going to need some help from Republicans, because they might have some progressives that don't want to sign it because it includes the Israel aid. But if they can get enough signatures, then it would force Speaker Johnson to bring this bill to the floor for a vote. All the media reports on it are saying it's kind of a long shot, so it's not really clear if it's going to work. So a couple other things I left up for today's page, so let's get over to that. So those were a few things from the day that I missed. And the first story at the top of antiwar.com today, Taiwan confirms that U.S. troops are in Kinmen. And if you remember where Kinmen is a group of Taiwanese-controlled islands that are on the coast of mainland China, just a few miles from the coast of mainland China. Taiwanese Defense Minister Xu Guoqiang confirmed on Thursday the presence of U.S. Army Special Forces soldiers in Kinmen, and some parts of the Kinmen Islands are just 2.5 miles away from the mainland Chinese city of Xiamen, just 2.5 miles away. And the presence of U.S. troops on these islands was first reported by Taiwanese media last month. If you remember, I covered it because this is a big deal. I mean, you try to put the shoe on the other foot in these scenarios. I can't think of anything comparable, I guess, besides Chinese troops being right over the border in Canada or Mexico or something like that. So Chu confirmed the highly provocative deployment when he was asked about a new report from the U.S. outlet SofRep that said U.S. Green Berets have taken up permanent positions as military advisors in Kinmen. The U.S. soldiers are also deployed in Pengwe, which is a Taiwanese-controlled archipelago about 30 miles west of Taiwan and 70 miles east of mainland China, so further away than Kinmen, obviously, but still not too far across the Taiwan Strait. So this new report from this U.S. outlet, SofRep, said that the U.S. Green Berets were stationed at the Taiwanese Army's Amphibious Command Centers and that this deployment was carried out under provisions in the 2023 National Defense Authorization Act, which called for the U.S. to create a comprehensive training program for the Taiwanese military. The new collaboration includes the U.S. troops training Taiwanese forces on the Black Hornet Nano, which is a compact military drone. So these drones are really small. They can fit in the palm of your hand. That's just the only example, really, of the type of training that they're doing. So Taiwan's defense minister said that the presence of the U.S. Green Berets was a learning opportunity for Taiwan's military. So this follows a pattern of the U.S. increasing its support for Taiwan, its troop deployments to Taiwan. And I mean, this is just, again, like, what is the purpose of this besides just being incredibly provocative just to be a tripwire for a potential war? Because if China does decide to invade Taiwan or attack Taiwan, you know, the battle is going to open probably on these islands. And there were battles over these islands in the 1950s during the first and second Taiwan Strait crisis. And during those, the U.S. intervened and sent its Navy fleet through the Taiwan Strait. So there's a history here. And it's just, I don't know, it just seems reckless and insane to me, and it doesn't get much media attention, so I wanted to make it the top story here. All right, so the next story here, the House passes a Biden-supported bill to ban TikTok. So this was from Wednesday. This is one of the things Kyle wrote up while I was out, and this is a big deal. The House passed a bill that will allow the president to ban TikTok without an ownership change. Opponents of the legislation warned that it will give the executive a massive amount of power to control online discourse. The bill now heads to the Senate, and President Biden says that he will sign the legislation if it reaches his desk. So this bill has been titled the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. It was introduced by Mike Gallagher, who is the GOP rep who heads the House Committee on China. Total China hawk, completely hysterical. And this is, you know, just completely overreach, you know, just to take away a platform like TikTok that the U.S. government doesn't have full control over, even though a lot of the censorship that you see on TikTok now is more influenced by the U.S. than China, I would say. So this bill, they're saying if ByteDance doesn't divest its shares from the company within 6 months, or it will be banned by the app store, so you wouldn't be able to download it on your phone. And ByteDance is a Chinese company. But, you know, one reason why I think they're pushing this now is the fact that they're not happy with all the pro-Palestine content on TikTok. I think that's a big reason why they're moving on this now. This is something that they've been trying to do for a while. Trump was trying to get Microsoft to buy it or something. I think he's come out against the ban, but it passed the House pretty overwhelmingly, 352-65. So this is all part of this new Cold War with China. You know, these are the types of things that we're going to see when they have this China to point to as the big enemy. You know, we're going to see much more of this. And, you know, you see some people like Kyle has a quote here from Matt Gaetz, who's a congressman from Florida, saying that he wants to ban TikTok, but that this legislation is too broad. It basically gives the president the power to ban something that he declares is controlled by a foreign entity, which is a very, very broad definition. But, you know, if you want the federal government to ban TikTok, to ban social media platform, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get overreach like this. So it's very bad. Hopefully, you know, I'm not sure when the Senate is supposed to vote on it, but we'll see what happens. And Thomas Massie has been very good on this. There's a tweet here from him. He calls the TikTok ban a Trojan horse. He says that the president will be given the power to ban websites, not just apps. The person breaking the new law is deemed to be the U.S. or offshore internet hosting service or app store, not the foreign adversary. So it's bad news. And if it does get through the Senate, looks like Biden's going to jump on it and sign it right away. All right. So the next one here, Senator Chuck Schumer says that Netanyahu is an obstacle to peace. So on Thursday, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer slammed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as an obstacle to peace and called for new elections in Israel. Schumer said in a speech on the Senate floor, quote, "As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past." End quote. So Schumer says that he believes there should be a new election. So this is basically the head of the Senate saying that Israel must have new elections. And of course, people in Israel were not happy about this. Netanyahu's Likud party put out a statement in response that said, quote, "Israel is an independent and proud democracy that elected Prime Minister Netanyahu, not a banana republic. It is expected of Senator Schumer to respect Israel's elected government and not undermine it. This is always true, but even more so during wartime," end quote. So politicians in the U.S. were also unhappy with the Senate leader's remarks. Mitch McConnell, who's the minority leader, said, quote, "Israel is not a colony of America whose leaders serve at the pleasure of the party in power in Washington. Only Israel's citizens should have a say in who runs their government," end quote. So polling has shown that the majority of Israelis want Netanyahu to resign or for there to be new elections once Israeli operations in Gaza come to an end, giving Netanyahu an incentive to keep the genocidal war going. Schumer said that Netanyahu was prioritizing his political survival over Israel. And I just mentioned in the article how we're seeing this pattern from Democrats who support Israel, like Schumer, like Biden, distancing themselves from the Netanyahu government because you have people like Ben-Gavir who say things outright, who celebrate when Palestinian children are shot dead by Israeli forces. And in his speech as well, Schumer, you know, he's not calling for peace. He also expressed his opposition to a permanent ceasefire, claiming that it would only allow Hamas to regroup and launch more attacks against Israelis. So this is all, I think, a strategy, again, to distance themselves from what they see as the radical Netanyahu government, even though the Israeli government, you know, the Knesset, the majority support this horrific war in Gaza. All right, so the next one here, dozens killed in a new Israeli massacre of Palestinians waiting for aid. So this article is from Middle East Eye, and this story just came out not too long ago, so all the details aren't confirmed, but it says dozens of Palestinians were killed and injured by Israeli helicopter fire on Thursday evening while they were awaiting aid in northern Gaza, several news outlets have reported. A journalist with Al Jazeera Arabic reported that nearly 50 Palestinians were killed. Several news outlets also reported that dozens were injured, but Middle East Eye could not independently verify this figure. So far, the Palestinian Health Ministry confirmed 11 people were killed. There were 11 dead bodies that arrived at the Al-Shifa hospital in northern Gaza, and 100 were injured, and it was working to retrieve more dead bodies. The ministry added that it expects the death toll to rise because of the seriousness of the injuries. The attack took place when an Israeli helicopter fired on a crowd of thousands of Palestinians waiting for aid at the Kuwait roundabout in Gaza City, according to the Quds News Network. So there's an attack on Palestinians waiting for aid just a day earlier as well. This seems to be a common thing that is happening, especially in northern Gaza, where people are much more desperate. All right, so the next one here, the EU says that Israel showed no evidence for the claim that UNRWA was tied to Hamas. This article is from Kyle at the Libertarian Institute. It says a top European Union official said the body has not received any evidence from Israel to back its claims that the UN's Palestinian aid agency, UNRWA, is tied to Hamas. Several EU members cut funding to UNRWA after Tel Aviv alleged several of the organization's staffers participated in the October 7th attack, and they also claim that thousands of employees have ties to Hamas. So the head of humanitarian aid at the EU's European Commission said that nobody at the EU has received evidence to back the Israeli claims. So they're saying that they haven't seen anything. All right, the next one here. The Houthis vow to expand attacks on Israeli shipping. So Houthi leader Abdul Malik al-Houthi vowed on Thursday that the Yemeni group would expand its targeting of Israel-linked commercial shipping to hit vessels in the Indian Ocean that are trying to get around the Red Sea. Al-Houthi said, quote, "Our main battle is to prevent ships linked to the Israeli enemy from passing through not only the Arabian Sea, the Red Sea, and the Gulf of Aden, but also the Indian Ocean towards the Cape of Good Hope. This is a major step, and we have begun to implement our operations related to it," end quote. So this goes to show, you know, I'm not sure the range of Houthi missiles, how far in the Indian Ocean that they can hit, because he's talking about ships that will go around below Africa, around the Cape of Good Hope to avoid the Red Sea. But this goes to show how this new U.S. bombing campaign against the Houthis has done nothing to deter them. And, you know, they keep escalating their attacks on commercial shipping. And U.S. officials have acknowledged that they don't know how much damage they're doing to the Houthis. They really have no idea. But despite the lack of success, they continue to bomb Yemen. There was fresh U.S. airstrikes, 11 U.S. airstrikes reported in Yemen's Hodeidah province on Thursday. There were some strikes the day before as well. Al-Houthi said that U.S. military action will not stop them from supporting Gaza, and he vowed that the attacks would continue until the Israeli onslaught in Gaza comes to an end, and that is what the Houthis, or Ansar Allah, have said this whole time. And he also said that the U.S. and British involvement is only going to widen the conflict and war at the regional level. Al-Houthi also said that 34 Houthis have been killed since Ansar Allah began targeting Israel-linked commercial shipping in response to the slaughter in Gaza. And according to the Yemen Data Project, at least one civilian was killed and 10 have been wounded by U.S. and British airstrikes. All right, so the next one here, Israel destroys a house in southern Lebanon and intercepts a drone. This one's from Jason Ditz. More exchange of rocket and other types of fire across the border. So after an overnight exchange of rocket and artillery fire in southern Lebanon, Israeli warplanes carried out an airstrike against a two-story house in Al-Nakoura. Ambulances reportedly rushed to the scene, but there is no word of casualties. Israel referred to the attack in the context of attacking terrorist infrastructure, though there is no indication this was anything but a normal house. Air raid sirens sounded in Upper Galilee as Israel's military reported intercepting an aerial target. So Israel's saying that they intercepted a drone after these airstrikes that they launched. And this is just, you know, to show that it's basically every day that we have this rocket fire, airstrikes or whatever across the border here. And the situation could explode. And Israel's threatening invasion. Jason also mentions that Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah is downplaying the risk of a comprehensive Israeli war, saying that he believes the Israeli campaign in Gaza has left them too exhausted to try to mount such a new endeavor, saying that Israel doesn't have the capability to have a full-blown war in the north and continue what it's doing in Gaza. All right, so the next one here, Macron again suggests that NATO troops should go to Ukraine. So French President Emmanuel Macron has once again said that NATO should not rule out sending troops to Ukraine despite the risk of direct war with Russia, which of course could quickly turn nuclear. Macron sparked an uproar when he first made the comments about NATO troops deploying to Ukraine last month and has defended the bellicose rhetoric each time he's been asked about it. So in an interview on French national television, Macron said that NATO was not in the situation. He said, under the current situation, they're not going to send troops, but he said that all options remain possible. And the talk of sending Western troops to Ukraine has, of course, put more attention on the fact that there are some NATO special operations forces. And the Discord leaks did say last year, March 2023, that there were 15 French special operations soldiers in Ukraine. But what Macron appears to be considering here and talking about is a larger deployment, a public deployment of NATO troops to Ukraine. And he's really not dropping this. He's really changed his tone. And in the early days of the war, he was talking to Putin and he was talking about diplomacy. Now he's talking about sending troops and really, really bellicose rhetoric and saying that basically NATO should be able to do whatever it takes to stop Russia from winning this war in Ukraine. All right, so the next one here, Scholz, the German chancellor, says that sending Taurus missiles to Ukraine would be irresponsible. So German Chancellor Olaf Scholz on Wednesday reaffirmed his opposition to arming Ukraine with Taurus missiles, which have a range of over 300 miles and could be used to hit targets deep inside Russia. He said that it would be irresponsible and that it would require the deployment of German troops to Ukraine. He told Germany's parliament, quote, "From my point of view, this is a very long-range weapon, given the significance of not losing control over targets. This weapon could not be used without the deployment of German soldiers," end quote. So other members of Scholz's government want Germany to supply Ukraine with these Taurus missiles. The foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, she's called for Berlin to intensively consider the possibility. Scholz said that the idea was out of the question, but he has previously agreed to things that he initially ruled out, like sending tanks. He was very strongly against sending tanks for a while, and he would explain his opposition and say, look, I'm trying to prevent World War III. I don't want NATO to be directly involved in this thing. Well, he ended up signing off on the tanks, so I wouldn't rule out that he eventually agrees to send these long-range missiles, and even though he's saying it would require the deployment of German troops. All right, so the next one here, the U.S. launches an airstrike in Somalia and claims that three al-Shabaab were killed. So U.S. Africa Command announced that it launched an airstrike in Somalia on March 10th in support of the Mogadishu-based government, marking the second time the U.S. bombed the country this month. AFRICOM said the strike hit a target in the vicinity of Ugunji, a village about 44 miles southwest of Mogadishu. The command claimed that its initial assessment found three al-Shabaab fighters were killed and no civilians were harmed, but AFRICOM is notorious for undercounting civilian casualties, and U.S. military operations in Somalia are shrouded in secrecy. So the last AFRICOM strike reported in Somalia took place on March 2nd, and the command claimed that it killed two al-Shabaab members, It's unclear. We don't know if AFRICOM reports all U.S. airstrikes in Somalia. The CIA is known to launch drone strikes in Somalia, and of course, they don't report those. So this gives us an idea of how much the U.S. is bombing Somalia, though. So twice this month, and it was about two or three times last month. So this war continues that many people aren't even aware of, and this is the U.S. backing the government that's based in Mogadishu against al-Shabaab. And, you know, I always call it the Mogadishu-based government because if you just call it the Somali government, people might assume that they control the whole country of Somalia. But, of course, you have Somaliland in the north, which is autonomous. You have al-Shabaab control some territory. There's a lot of tribal control of territory in Somalia as well. But these latest U.S. airstrikes came after Nick Turse for The Intercept reported on this 2007 study that the Pentagon commissioned that studied the U.S. campaign in the Horn of Africa. And it basically said that there was glaring problems. There was flaws in the operations and all sorts of problems. And instead of addressing those problems, of course, the U.S. military just pressed ahead with this war. And now, you know, that was in 2007, nearly two decades later, this thing continues and there's no end in sight. And the U.S. just continues to bomb Somalia. All right, so that's it for the news. One thing I wanted to mention earlier when I was talking about yesterday's page, one cool feature that we have, if you go into the sidebar at antiwar.com, you'll see a section that says the last 7 days, and it's listed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you can click on those days to see the page for that day. And then if you click previous days, you can actually, it pulls up a calendar and you can go way, way back, which is, it's a pretty cool feature. And I believe this goes all the way back to the early 2000s. So you could see what the headlines on antiwar.com were back then. So let me just make sure I'm on the right page now. Yes, I am. All right, so go check out our viewpoints. One good one from Kelly Vlahos over at Responsible Statecraft. Mission creep: will Pier become a beachhead for the U.S. in Gaza? One from Jack Merkinson: the tragic absurdity of Biden's Gaza policies. One from Ramsey Baroud: words versus action, a supplication for Gaza and humanity. One from Raiho Takuchi: how the U.S. military stole Japan's sovereignty. And our spotlight is from Connor O'Keefe: banning TikTok will not make Americans safer. So that's everything. That's it for the week. I hope everyone has a good weekend. You could always support us by sharing the show, like, subscribe, follow us on Instagram. It's looking really good over there. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. I'll be back after the weekend. I hope everybody has a good one. Thanks for listening.